Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 486. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about river cruising and wine, UNESCO World Heritage Sites and more wine, Portugal and still more wine, as we cruise the Douro River with Viking River Cruises. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. This is going to be a different episode of the Amateur Traveler as it's recorded live. The sound quality is not going to be quite as good and it's not going to be as heavily edited, but I hope you'll enjoy this special episode of the Amateur Traveler.
I'd like to welcome to the show three guests today. It's going to be a little different show because we're doing this one live, and I believe this is the first episode of the Amateur Traveler ever recorded live after 10 years. So I have three guests with me today, and they are in order from right to left, not that that means anything to you, Aaron Saunders and John Souza and Mary Quincy, and we are all currently on the Viking River Cruises ship Torgal on the Douro River in the Douro Valley in Portugal. And that is basically what we're going to be talking about today, is both the Douro Valley and this particular way of seeing the river, or seeing Portugal. We actually started a little bit of our itinerary. We started in Lisbon, and which is not on the Douro River, did a tour in Lisbon, and then came up to the river to Porto and spent, did anybody know, 7 days?
7 days, yeah.
Cruising up from Porto all the way up to Salamanca in Spain. Well, close to Salamanca in Spain. Bust up there, and have been seeing the Douro Valley.
Yeah.
So I want to leap in and say, how would you describe the Douro Valley? Who should come here?
Well, I think the ideal target for people to come here is there's two kinds of people. Number one is if you like wine, this is an excellent place to come. I mean, the Douro River Valley is a UNESCO World Heritage Site, specifically because of its historic role in port wine production. Mm-hmm. So all port wine legally, it's a bit like champagne. To be called champagne, you must have that produced in the Champagne region of France. To come here to have Porto, port, it has to be from this region. It's got to be from the Douro River Valley, and it derives its name from the city of Porto.
Okay. And now they do grow other wine here as well.
Sure.
So
yeah,
we've had a lot of wine.
We've had a lot of wine.
So if you like wine, this may be a trip for you.
And I think, too, if you like wine and you want to learn more about wine, I mean, it's not just a trip where you just go and drink wine for the fun of it. You do actually get to learn a lot about the way it's produced and the historic origins of it. So I think people who like wine would enjoy it, and I think people who like history would enjoy it, and just coming to Europe and river cruising through somewhere different.
Yeah, I think this valley is so steeped in tradition. I mean, every hillside we've passed, there's little bends in the river, so it's great to watch the views as the ship goes by, but every hillside is terraced, and that's a lot of work. There's a lot of history in these walls and seeing these vineyards and everything, just beautiful. So it's been really great to be able to kind of get a glimpse into the history of Portugal as you go through the valley.
And you say terraced, and that's the reason why, as and that was John and Aaron started us here, and that's the reason why this is a UNESCO World Heritage Site, is that terracing was a lot of work. As the poet said, as we heard on this trip, the God made the world and the Portuguese made the Douro Valley.
Yeah.
And I know we were at a winery yesterday, and Aaron, you were with me, and John, you set that one out, and we'll talk about that too.
Sure.
And that winery, their terraces were 250 years old.
Yeah.
Although at the time they were planted, they were port wine, and then at the time that the phylloxera came through here and destroyed all wine production, they switched to Muscatel.
Yeah.
But we've seen port wine production, Muscatel wine production, Vino Verde, and then some other table wine production, I think, as well.
Yeah, quite a bit. And then olive oil, too, on top of all of that.
Right, right, know. That's true. Yeah. Especially as you get in the upper Douro Valley, where a lot of the vines never got replanted.
Yeah.
When they were wiped out by that disease that basically wiped out almost all wine production in Europe, if not all wine production.
Yeah, it nearly stopped it. It nearly decimated the entire thing. So the fact that now, I mean, the one advantage of that is that now the Douro River Valley is so much more diversified in what they produce here. I mean, they
right.
actually do produce a lot of different
right.
kinds of wines and oils and that.
Well, in the winery we went to, the town we went to yesterday that produces Muscatel produces, what, 30 million bottles of Muscatel a year.
A year, yeah.
The trick was that many of them were little bottles.
Yeah, they're the ones you'd find in your mini bar in the little Hilton or whatever.
Right.
You get that there.
Although apparently they serve them for having with your beer. Which
that's right.
I was surprised. But we had a lot of wine and a lot of sweet wine, both the Muscatel and the Porto being a sweet dessert wine, and a fortified wine, and therefore much higher in alcohol.
Yes.
Which we've been yeah. drinking a lot. We've been drinking a lot on this trip. So, but let's start in Lisbon. What was most memorable about the Lisbon part of the trip? Because there's two nights in Lisbon at
yeah.
the beginning of the trip, plus optional extensions. I actually came and didn't do optional extensions with Viking, but we did some of the same things in the sense that we went to some of the other UNESCO World Heritage sites, the palaces and the nearby Moorish castle, which we talked about in the recent episode we did on Lisbon. But what stood out for you guys in terms of the trip part in Lisbon?
I know Viking put us in that hotel right on, I think it was Liberty University Boulevard or something like that. And
in Portuguese.
Right, in Portuguese. I'm not going to try to pronounce it. But the wide sidewalks, and every sidewalk had this beautiful artwork embedded in the cobblestone.
The mosaic.
And it was like this mosaic
yeah.
everywhere you went. I mean, it was all the way from the hotel down to the shoreline, which is a
right.
good mile and a half or so walk. And it was just everywhere you went, it was just this beautiful mosaics and just love that aspect of Lisbon.
Of Lisbon.
Yeah.
To me, it would be like the color of the buildings. Actually, in the old town, it was just wonderful how different colors the buildings were, and it was really, really picturesque. And it was easier for me to take pictures because, like, I love colors on buildings and stuff.
And Mary is the photographer. We'll talk more
yeah.
about what each Aaron and John and Mary do later on in the show. But yeah, they're known for their light.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, they are. And it was very different from other cities we've visited, like Porto, which was really like fade colors, really fade colors. And that wasn't that pretty than Lisbon.
Of course, we also visited Porto on a rainy, misty day.
Yeah, so. That was true. That was true.
One of the things that was very different once we went from Lisbon to Porto that defined the two different cities is that Lisbon, as we've talked about on this show before, had the big earthquake
right.
in the 1700s.
1755,
which destroyed, basically flattened the city, and everything was rebuilt since then. Where Porto survived that earthquake because it was far enough away. We're talking about a couple hours drive by bus between the two, or possibly even longer than that.
It's about, if you were to do the drive in one stretch, it'd be about 2.5 to 3 hours. Drive.
Okay, because yeah, we did stop at yet another UNESCO World Heritage Site, which is Coimbra,
yeah.
Which is the university there and the library there, which was incredible. I wish I had
yeah.
pictures of that to share, but they would not
right.
let us
we
take
not allowed.
Pictures of the rare books and this a temple to knowledge. I also
yeah.
almost want to call the library there because it was
yeah.
incredibly ornate and Baroque and incredibly beautiful library with bats that
yeah.
eat the
tiny bats.
Yeah, the bats eat the mites and the insects that would otherwise destroy the book, so they release these bats.
Which had to be the strangest thing we heard on this, was that they intentionally keep bats in the library.
I think we were all looking for them after she said that. Like, where are these bats?
Well, the guide had said to us, we said, well, where's the bats? And the guide said, oh, no, don't worry about it. They just sleep on top of the books during the day. It's like, okay.
These rare and precious books,
that we can't take photographs of. Yeah.
Right.
But then Porto, having survived it, one of the things that surprised me is every little neighborhood church I went into, I went to three or four different churches, had the immensely ornate Baroque gold gilded altarpieces. Mm-hmm. Because apparently all the churches in Lisbon did also as well until 1755 when they fell down, burned down.
Well, I think that's actually a nice thing that Viking does. I mean, there's two kind of positives about starting in Lisbon. The first thing is that it allows you to get in, get settled, get over your jet lag. I mean, I think for a lot of North Americans, you're going to be probably flying through Lisbon Airport anyhow, so it sort of makes sense for you to stop there. But the unexpected thing I found was that it actually gave you that contrast that you're talking about.
Right.
Because if you would have just flown into Porto, you don't really get that same contrast with it. Otherwise, Lisbon is a very beautiful city, but it's kind of like a lot of other big European cities. There's some similarities there.
Right.
So to have that contrast and be able to see Lisbon and then go to Porto, I think it makes people appreciate Porto more than perhaps they would have had the tour just started there.
And to know what the people in Portugal, in Lisbon, went through during that earthquake. And I think the colors that Mary was talking about is a testament to the people's, their positive outlook. And, okay, earthquake's over, we're going to rebuild. And, I mean, that city was decimated in the earthquake. And to rebuild and to have these bright, colorful buildings, and then they go up to Porto, the thing that just stood out to me was the train station. If you go to Porto, make sure you go in the train station, because you got a lot of history in the tile work all over the building there, and it just...
Well, and we saw the tile work a lot in Lisbon because that was a style that was popular at the time they rebuilt, you know, starting in 1755, 1756, whenever they started, you know, cleaning things up, is the glazed tiles on the outside of buildings, often the same repeated work, but then, as we said, in the Porto train station, among other many places we saw, some churches that we saw, the railway station just where we were last night in... You have to say Pinhão.
Pinhão. We've been working on our Portuguese this week.
And it's gotten newer. But had these basically hand-painted tiles.
Yeah.
You went to
the Tile Museum
in Lisbon.
Yes, we had a chance. Viking gave us an opportunity to go to the Tile Museum and see this wonderful artwork on these tiles, and at the end we could make our own tiles, and we're going to be seeing them later on today, I believe, our own artwork. But I think one of the guides said during that tour that if the house didn't have tile in it, it's not a Portuguese home. It's got to have that tile. It's such a part of the fabric of the Portuguese.
And that definitely is something that I'm taking away visually from Portugal, especially from Lisbon, but also, as you said, from the train station in Porto, from some of the churches that had these great big white and blue mural tiles, mm-hmm. basically hand-painted tiles. And the other thing we should say is almost everything is included on Viking. And that tends to be true. Aaron, you have done 17 cruises this year. some other river cruises and some other competitors who we won't necessarily name by name on this show. But
we don't need to.
but it tends to be typical, though, on the river cruises that you include a walking tour, for instance, in every city you go to.
Yeah, I mean, the one nice thing with river cruises is, I always like to say, there really is no entry-level river cruise. I mean, river cruises on a whole start at a much more inclusive level. So typically, and this is true of Viking, Viking includes beer, wine, and soft drinks with lunch and dinner, which is really helpful and handy. And
you mean wine the rest of the time? I mean, it seems like the bar is pretty much open.
It is. Well, they include it then. But so, and the thing too to know as well is that you will never see the bottom of your wine glass. So this is one of those where they give you one pour of things and then cut you off. They will keep you very hydrated, let's say. The other thing that they do is they include...
I really needed a coaster to put on the top of my wine glass sometimes.
Yeah, you almost have to do what you do in Germany and say, no, this is enough. The other thing that they do that's fascinating is that you will get a selection of complimentary tours. So every day, more often than not, all of the tours are complimentary. what Viking does is they also decide to say, well, hey, we're going to offer you some extra experiences. And these are excursions that come at a pretty modest cost. Usually they're about between, say, 40-year-old person and perhaps up to 100-year-old person.
And the visit to the Tile Museum was one of those.
That was one of those, and that was 44-year-old person.
And then the other one, now, we were all guests of Viking, so we weren't paying for that, to be honest, and with great thanks to Viking, but that's how much it would charge normally for that. And then there was another tour over to the city that starts with a G, whose name I cannot pronounce.
Guimarães,
which is where the home of the Portuguese nation is, another UNESCO
yes.
World Heritage Site.
Very beautiful city as well.
Probably more culturally significant than stunning visually, I would say, that particular site.
Yeah, Guimarães has a really beautiful old town. I always like recommending people should go there just because, and again, it is a UNESCO World Heritage Site, and it does have some really interesting historic monuments, and it has its own look and feel that it's neither Lisbon nor Porto. It's
right.
Definitely its own thing. And so that's the fun thing with that is, you know, if you just want to do the complimentary tour in Porto, that's completely fine. You'll have an excellent time. These are tours that are more for the guests who are really fascinated by the history of a particular place, and so Viking charges a modest amount to go on that, and I feel personally that that's fair, because really you can come on here and not spend an extra dime.
Except for tips.
Well,
you
yeah.
don't have to, but that
well, yeah.
I would budget for
that's
for
the
tips.
Thing. The gratuities on Viking are not included. On some river cruise lines they are, but
right.
on Viking they do come at an extra cost.
Right.
And I believe they recommend about 11 or 12 euro per person per day.
And then they also recommended for the bus driver 1 euro a day and the tour guide 2 euros
yeah,
a day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I love how each trip for each guest is really customized. Because, yeah, you have the morning tours you can go on with the group. But if you want to do something else, you can talk to the front desk. They'll arrange another kind of tour that you can take.
Right.
And if you don't want to do all the different activities throughout the day, you don't have to.
Right.
If you want to just enjoy a ride down the river like we are right now, I wanted to point out we're going down the Douro River, looking out this beautiful balcony at the Douro Valley. So each guest can kind of have their own vacation. If they want to stay busy the whole time and go to see
right.
as much as possible, you can do that. If you want to just sit back on the sun deck in a lounger and enjoy the views, you can do that too.
Or as you know, on the press trip like this, we've had people who yesterday just needed to get work done
yes.
or possibly had partied too much the night before and stayed home and didn't go to what turned out to be a fabulous outing, but we'll get to that in a bit. So what going on with the itinerary, we went to Porto and then we cruised up mostly to small towns, basically between, as you're in Portugal, you're stopping at relatively small towns.
Yeah.
And then being bussed anywhere from
half an hour up to 2 hours.
Yeah, half an hour, 2 hours to see something interesting on your day tour
yeah.
tended to be pretty typical.
And that's worth noting, too, because if people have, say, cruised the Danube before, mm-hmm. on the Danube, typically, you're docking, if you're not at the center,
yeah.
then you're just outside of it. Like, for example, in Vienna, the Danube does not flow through the center of town, so you
right.
can take the metro in or you take the bus in.
And Rhine the same way.
Exactly.
Except for, saying going to Heidelberg.
To Heidelberg, yeah, exactly. So the one thing to know with this is that usually here the towns themselves are not a gigantic draw. I mean, they're very,
right.
very small. They're very cool to see, but these are not Vienna. This is not Budapest. These are very small, authentic Portuguese towns. And, you know, it does pay to be prepared for a little bit of bus travel by motor coach.
Right.
Most of them, I'd say, were about 30 minutes. The one up to Salamanca is about 2.5 hours-ish
yeah.
on the coach. Well worth it, but it's one of those things you might want to bring a book or an iPod or something like this.
Right.
And that's the only thing I think that might disappoint people if they haven't quite done the research is if they've been on the Danube, they'll imagine that it's like the Danube, where they're just going to dock and get off the ship
right.
and go on a walking tour. And here it doesn't quite work that way, but they do make up for it by offering
yeah.
some pretty cool experiences.
And I think every time we had a longer bus ride that was an hour, hour and a half, the destination was always worth it. When you got there, you said, oh, that's why they're willing to bus
right.
us all the way out
yeah.
here. Like Salamanca was just incredible.
And not just the destination section. When you were looking out the window in the bus, you could see the fabulous landscape.
Right.
Yeah.
It was
true.
Just incredible. And you were never bored, actually. Like, even though you were listening
yeah.
to music, like, there was like entertainment outside of your window.
You would constantly hear camera shutters going off as we went by throughout.
That may be my fault.
Well, I agree with Mary about that. I think that the drive to some of these places, particularly the tour we did yesterday, we ended up getting detoured and going off the highway and taking some of these little back roads that I'm pretty sure a motor coach was never supposed to go on.
Yeah, I don't think that was intentional. But.
No, but sometimes little things like that, even an accident like that, the landscape was just, you couldn't take your eyes off of it. This was not an uninteresting drive at all. This was very fascinating.
And I would say most of our side trips off the river were to, well, I'd say probably number one would be wineries.
Yep.
Because that is a theme of this. And so we went to different wineries. We went to a few old monasteries. And I say old monasteries, ex-monasteries, because all the monks got kicked out in the early 1800s. 1835 or so, I believe, was the date that in a Portuguese civil war, all the monks and nuns were asked to leave the country. But so there were a lot of, actually, that was the other thing that surprised me, actually, was a lot of monasteries turned into city halls or nunneries turned into something else.
Yeah, I think a monastery today, they said, is now used by the army.
Right, interesting, in a very Catholic country, it's got an interesting history there with that.
And that's something that the tour guides were great. Even on those long bus rides, it didn't seem that long because the tour guides were not only very informative, I know the one on our bus was very entertaining as well, so we were all laughing, having a good time, enjoying the trip, and so it made it go by quickly.
There was at least one of the bus rides that I wish the tour guide had been a little less informative. I think one of the ones we got up early, and the tour guide said, well, I know many of you want to sleep, and then talk for an hour, so you will have that. you can always bring your earplugs, you don't have to listen to that. When you're in the city, then, and for people who haven't done a river cruise, you may not be used to this, but it's fairly typical for river cruises, we would have our quiet boxes. We were using a slightly older version on the boat than we were in Lisbon, but that means you have basically a portable radio that you're listening to the guide, so the guide can talk even in the cathedral in a normal voice, or even in a whisper directly in a microphone, and you can be 100 feet away.
Or at times the guide would not be even go into the cathedral, would not want to disturb everyone, so they'd stay outside and we'd go inside and look while they were able to tell us all
that. I mean, they're actually quite, and that's the thing, they have become extremely common for river cruises. I can't think of a single river cruise line that doesn't use quiet boxes.
Right.
I mean, they're used throughout Europe, they're used throughout Asia, they're extraordinarily common. And for good reason. It's because for that exact reason, there's, in the old days, you had a guide that was trying to yell above the guide next to them.
Right.
Everybody's waving a big umbrella. I mean, it all fell apart quickly. So with these, it's a little tiny portable receiver. You hang it around your neck. It's got a single earpiece that goes into your left ear. It hurts terribly, but that's okay.
The newer boxes that we use,
the newer ones,
where I could use my own.
You could
earbuds were better.
The new ones have a standard headphone jack, so you can use the iPhone headphones or whatever you like. You're still going to see both kinds on the river, but they essentially have the same function.
Right.
And they are extremely useful.
I have a love-hate relationship with them in the sense that I have a thing against group tours. I will admit, even though I run group tours.
You're on the wrong trip, my friend.
It does identify you as being on a group tour, that you, especially when you're wearing it around your neck.
Sure.
So I usually put it in my pocket.
Yep.
And that was the other reason I like when I could use my own earbuds, is that it wasn't obvious that I was on a group tour, because I'm 50 feet away looking the other direction, taking pictures. But the other thing I like about it, that I really do like about it, is the fact that I can be 50 feet away taking pictures, a half a block ahead, a half a block behind.
You know, I tried it out once in Vienna on another river cruise, and I actually got 2.5 blocks away before the signal cut out. So, I mean, you really can be, depending on your circumstances and the buildings you're in, you really can be quite far away.
I did find in Salamanca, when they cut the corner around a great big massive cathedral.
Yeah, the cathedrals tend to block out everything.
That didn't work as well. The new cathedral in Salamanca.
Right.
You know, the one from the 1500s.
Yeah, that one.
the new one.
I know Mary appreciated that too, because as a photographer, you know, I could see she's wanting to get the right shot, and sometimes you have to walk away from the group a little bit to get that.
Right.
So you're still listening, and you know, for me, I would just listen until I hear some static, and I look around, okay, am I too far from the group?
Right.
I gotta catch up now.
Yeah. Well, and if you walk half a block ahead, you don't have anybody in your shot.
Right, that's true.
That's also why I don't really like tour groups, because it's kind of annoying to have always like a bunch of people standing in front of you and blocking your shot. And in a way, it's very nice when you're taking pictures for the company to have like the group of people in front of you. But at some point, you want to get some pictures for yourself or the pictures that are mainly showing the site or the building and having people wearing hats everywhere and with umbrellas and whatever.
Well, and let's bound this because this is a group experience. This
also,
is a group tour experience. Although it's not like being on a big cruise ship.
No.
The total number of passengers on this ship when fully loaded, 106. So we basically fit with lots of room to spare in three buses.
Yes. And Viking does that too. I mean, really, they could cram everybody onto two coaches, but instead they spread them out over three more luxurious, as you might say, coaches. But
and in most towns we were, those were the three tour buses we saw.
Precisely, yeah.
So very different than taking over the port in a big ship, cruise ship sort of thing. You don't go into port and see the Tanzanite sails and the T-shirt sails and things.
And even very different than just a regular river cruise along the Danube. I mean, certainly in the high season you get a lot more ships on the Danube. It's still nowhere near the point where it would overwhelm the ports, but certainly when you're walking along Amsterdam, you're going to see a lot of Viking logos, Alma logos, Uniworld logos. Whereas here, you know, we would see some other ships in port with us. But generally, those other ships seem to have alternating itineraries because we didn't typically see them in port.
Right.
We saw them with us physically, but they went somewhere else.
We waved at the other Viking ship as they went the other way on the river.
Yeah.
They have two ships right now on the river and a third coming.
Yeah. Viking Hemming. Right now, they've got Viking Hemming and Viking Torgil, which are identical sister ships. And next year, they'll have a third identical sister, Viking Ausfrid.
Well, and the interesting thing about you say identical ships and sister ships, but also ships made specifically for this river. And we got a chance to see that every time we went through the locks, because there are
five locks
total that we did on this. Okay, I slept through at least a few of those. But the locks are exactly the size of the ship, plus a couple inches in any direction.
And that's an important point too, because a lot of people, if they've cruised on the Danube on the Viking longships, they'll say, "Well, why can't you bring a longship here?" And the reason you can't isn't because they can't get it here; they certainly can.
Right.
The problem is the longships are 443 feet long; they will not fit in the lock.
Right.
These are 223, I think, and they fit snugly into those locks. So what they've done is this is like a baby longship or longship
light,
where they've got the same kind of cabin designs, the same sort of Scandinavian decor, and the aquavit terrace out in front of the lounge. So they've got all of the stuff that you would expect for longships to have.
There's a pool.
I didn't see anybody get in it on this trip, but maybe
I saw one man get in.
Did he? Okay.
Earlier, like a few people.
I suspect in the high season when it's hotter out, you'd see more.
Middle of July, I think that's a popular place to be.
The thing that surprised me though is when we went through the locks, and the locks are deep for one thing.
A couple were over 100 feet.
I believe so, yeah. At least that one was over 100 feet for sure.
And then also, at one point we were about to go, we're through the lock and under a bridge to get through the lock, and they've lowered the railing, they've lowered the sunshade on the sun deck, they've gotten everybody off the sun deck because you can't stand up on the sun deck, it's that low for that particular bridge. Some of the other ones, we were standing there and I could reach up and touch the bridge.
I was in the aquavit on one of those occasions going under a bridge, and I look up and I see the captain, and he's actually hunched over, I mean, the bridge that we're going under is just inches above his head, and he's running from one side to the other, hunched over to make sure everything was going smoothly.
Well, I don't know if that was the same one, but I looked up one point and I thought, something has gone wrong because the bridge is 2 feet too tall for this bridge. The bridge of the ship is 2 feet too tall for the bridge that we're going under, and then the bridge of the ship retracted.
Yeah, the wheelhouse can retract into its own housing, and in fact, in the wheelhouse, there's a little sunroof, and the captain can pop the little sunroof open, and it's just like the longships on the Danube. The entire wheelhouse structure lowers, and the captain just pops his head out just to make sure they're going to clear that bridge, and that's used if there's high water, because the problem here isn't so much low water, it's high water events that can really screw things up.
And I know I'm a nerd that I love that sort of thing. But I love that sort of thing. The way the locks work and watching those mechanisms work and the passage through that on this kind of ship, on, you know, the Panama Canal or something like that, I do enjoy that.
And you can see the excitement in the passengers always kind of
going
to the sun deck or the aquavit to check out what's going on and watching the ship drop in the locks or rise. And
right.
It's It's always a fun experience.
The great big doors open and such. Yeah.
I think someone was saying, Viking has done such a good job feeding us this week. The ship is a little bit lower in the water. So we have a little more clearance going under those bridges.
Yeah.
Maybe a couple inches.
Yes.
Is that food or is that liquid? I can't tell what that is.
Well, let's talk about that experience. So, anyone want to comment on the food experience on the ship? We've seen a lot of regional specialties as well as things that are not regional, as well as things that cater to the...
primarily North American clientele.
We haven't talked about who the clientele are. But, it's English-speaking.
Viking's whole thing is that they would like to have English-speaking guests, 55-plus, predominantly from North America, so mainly from the United States and Canada, but Australia is an emerging market for them. Mm-hmm. The UK is
we
a very emerging
number
market
of people from the UK on this ship.
Yes. And it's for people from the UK. And
New Zealand as well, to a small
New degree. Zealand, for anybody who's European who speaks English, this is an easy sell in some respects because you've got, like Mary, a 2-hour flight to get here.
Right.
The rest of us have this mammoth journey to get here. So I think Vikings initially they were just targeting North Americans. They really weren't going after Australians at all.
Right.
Or people from the UK. And now that's changed quite a bit because they're finding out that people from the UK and Australia do want a river cruise, and they'd like a river cruise very badly. And two, when the Australians travel, they do it for a month. These guys don't just go for 7 days like the average American does. This is a big deal. So that guest, that customer, might take 2 river cruises back to back.
Right. Well, and the other thing is, you said their target audience is 55-plus, although they're starting to do more with multi-generational, but there's no kids' programs.
No, there's no kids' programs, and Viking still is one of the few river cruise
lines. And there's not going to be either.
No, there's not going to be. And you know what? That's okay. There's nothing that says you've got to be everything to everyone.
Yeah.
But it is worth noting that while other lines offer multi-generational family sailings during the summer and Christmas, Viking doesn't do anything special for that. That's not their mandate. So, having said that, on the Christmas market sailings, you do see the average age start to skew younger. Uh-huh. You see some couples in their 40s, couples in their 30s, the parents traveling with the grown kids.
Right.
And I think that's perfect. For Viking, that kind of dynamic is really great.
And I would say on this cruise, I'm 54, and I was quite possibly younger than all the passengers except for the people on the press group. Now, yes, Mary at almost 24 was by far the youngest person on the ship, except for possibly somebody in the crew. The crew is younger than the passengers. There's definitely that, but I would say most of the people I talked to were retired.
Sure. And you could argue there's a certain price point that comes with that. I mean, certainly these are
probably retired from a good job.
Not inexpensive cruises, and you're looking at adding a transatlantic flight on top of that.
Right.
But on the same token, I always feel like, I'm 33-ish, almost, and, there's people I know that they don't have kids, they're married, they got 2 good jobs, they both got dual income. This is right up their alley. I mean, this is exactly what they would be looking for, but nobody's marketing to them.
Right.
I kind of feel like maybe that's something that I would like to see in the future, because I do think that there's a market there for people who are in their 30s and 40s who are curious about the world. But the whole bus tour thing just frightens the crap out of them. I mean, I think that's a terrible holiday, the bus tour.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to do one.
Yeah.
And most of the guests I talk to prefer that there is no kids program because they just want to have a nice relaxing time. And some kids don't want to see all this history, even though, some do, and it's great
for them. Some do, it's great for them, yeah.
For those that are history buffs or love to see the stuff they've read about all their lives, this is perfect opportunity.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing we should say is that, there's no climbing wall.
There's no flow rider.
No ice skating.
There's
no
shuffle
cars.
There's a shuffle board and a little mini
golf putting green.
Yes,
a golf putting green.
And the pool Mary mentioned, which is pretty awesome.
But really, you bring your own entertainment, and you do the tours.
I don't really think you can be bored. I mean, the other thing I always tell people is, on these river cruises are surprisingly active. They are far more active than an ocean cruise. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is closer to me to expedition cruising. An expedition cruise, you get off the ship, you go in the Zodiac every day, you come back for lunch, they work. I mean, they work.
It's somewhere in between that and an ocean cruise.
Sure.
Yeah.
And you've got this dynamic here where usually, I think we've had 2 mornings where we could sleep in. The rest of the time we've had tours that leave bright and early, 8:30, 9 o'clock-ish.
Right.
And you're going either over lunch and coming back in the afternoon, or you're going to lunch, coming back on board the ship for lunch, and then departing again in the afternoon. So really, the chances of you being bored or at loose ends
are
pretty slim, because by the time, you know, when you are on the ship cruising, all you want to do is sit in the lounge with a book and a cocktail and enjoy the scenery.
Actually, I didn't even find the time to do that. I felt like it was really great to have so many entertainment around me, but I didn't have time to relax, actually. Maybe because I'm working at the moment, but it was hard to find a time to rest in the lounge or whatever, because at 8:30 we gotta be ready to go, or 9 we gotta be ready to go after breakfast, and then we come back and it's the daily briefing, and then there's the dinner, and that's true, that there's no real time where you can sit down.
It's really free.
Especially
it's true.
Just today, actually.
For me, this feels relaxed, because compared to traveling on my own, there's a whole lot more downtime, and obviously somebody else is doing the driving. And the driving is just a lot more fun, whether that be the bus or the boat, especially the boat.
Yeah, and Chris and I were talking earlier about that, as far as major differences between river cruising and like an ocean cruise. And typically, the ocean cruises I've done is typically in the Caribbean or somewhere tropical, where most people are there. Some are there to party, but a lot are there just to do nothing for the entire week. Just kind of sitting
alone. I think that's the way the Caribbean cruise has always been marketed. Is this is a cruise where you go and you lay on the sun deck all day, and that's kind of how Caribbean cruise works. But there are deep ocean cruises that are more active or doing more things. But I think, too, there's an interesting dynamic there where typically a ship will be docked in port for the morning or the afternoon or better part of the day. But usually by 5 o'clock, they untie the thing, they pull the anchor up, and you spend the night sailing. So in the evening, there's more of a, I don't know if you'd say a social component, more of a chance to rest or something like that.
Right.
I mean, really, the evening is comprised of dinner and cocktails and sleep.
Right. And on this river, we actually weren't allowed to cruise at night.
That's right. The authorities don't let you sail.
We didn't sail till 6:30 in the morning, I think.
Would have missed some lovely scenery by doing it anyway. So quite often it would cruise while we were out on an excursion, though.
And that's the thing, I think, too, that's worth noting about the cruising on the Douro, is the Douro just doesn't have the distances the Danube does. I mean, going from Amsterdam to Budapest, you are covering multiple times over this distance.
Right.
So when we sail, we're sailing for 2 hours, 3 hours. In fact, I think this one today, this is the longest stretch of sea time.
Well, you also cruise round trip. We start in Porto, we end in Porto, which is very different from starting in Budapest and ending in
Nuremberg.
Very different that way. The other thing, in terms of, because they're targeting an older audience, there was more awareness of mobility issues. I noticed that at one point we were going to a town, the hill town of, drawing a complete blank.
The one where we did Sandeman?
The small hill town.
Castelo Rodrigo.
Castelo Rodrigo. And in Castelo Rodrigo, there was going to be a hill with cobblestones, and they were just very aware of telling people that, because there are some people on the boat who are moving slower, who do have mobility issues. And I think they are...
Was that a level 3?
That was a level 3.
Viking will classify different levels depending on how strenuous the walk is.
And today, for instance, we did a walk downhill from the shrine.
600 steps down.
Yeah, and so they were quite aware that that might be too difficult for some people, and so most of us walked, but a few people went back to the
coach
bus.
Back.
Took the coach back.
And I think that's one thing that Viking does incredibly well, is they're very, very attentive in their pre-cruise documentation about telling you how strenuous things are going to be and what you should pack. And even once you get on board the ship, they're very good about telling you, listen, you've got to be able to negotiate uneven cobblestones, uneven surfaces.
Right.
It brings into another thing that guests always ask, or potential cruisers always ask, is river cruising suitable for people who are confined to a wheelchair? And the unfortunate fact is, no, it's not.
I've been on a river cruise with someone who was, but it was a challenge.
It must, most lines will say we just cannot accommodate it. There's because
in part just the ramp going in and out
just
changes
the ramp getting
depending
off
on
the ship. So the ship has an elevator for people. I mean, if you have mobility issues with knees and things like that, the ship has an elevator that will take you throughout the decks. But really, the ramps, the docking areas, the cobblestones, the uneven surfaces.
And Europe in general.
Yeah, that's true. Even if they get you off the ship, there's still a lot of places to go.
Yeah, even if they get you off
the
ship, I'm thinking of like the docking locations in Budapest that you've got there. I mean, it's absolutely not suitable for that.
What surprised you about this trip?
This is my second trip with Viking, but it surprised me even more now than as it did the first time, was the level of personal touch you have with the crew that you don't always get in a larger ship. Sure. I mean, by the second day, you know, when you go in and out of the ship, you get your guest passport at the front desk there, so they know that you're gone. When you get back, you turn it in.
Right.
But by the second day, they already knew what room number. I didn't have to tell them.
And the name,
And the name.
They knew my name on the first second day.
Yeah. And that's, and we know, I mean, probably six or seven names of the staff here, just off the top of my
Tom,
head. You can name them.
Carmel,
because
Cormel,
just,
and
you interact with them.
Chris, and yeah, exactly.
In a smaller group, it's easy to have that personal touch, and that's been kind of...
That actually is the same thing that surprised me, or pleasantly surprised me, I should say, because the trick with the Doro is that Viking doesn't actually own this ship outright.
Right.
This is operated by a line called Doro Azul, and they handle the technical side of things for Viking because there are different rules and regulations in Portugal, and these regulations state that Doro Azul is kind of the de facto operator here. And plus, they've also been operating here for several decades, so you could argue that they've got the experience with this waterway and these rivers. So sometimes, you know, when a company gets another company to run things, even though all the staff are vetted by Viking and this and that, sometimes there's a slippage in quality. What impressed me was the staff on here, on the whole, are just everybody as friendly and accommodating as the staff on the Viking longships or even the staff on the Viking Star, the ocean cruise ship. The consistency is fantastic.
I would say that one of the waiters was more attentive if you were a woman. I won't name any names, but all the women said he was such a nice guy and a little bit of a flirt, and I'm thinking, well, he didn't react that way to me, no.
He didn't hit on me, nobody did.
But this is an older gentleman. I don't mean flirting in any sort of negative way here, but it was just very attentive. But the other thing that was a surprise is that the crew is predominantly Portuguese.
Sure, yeah.
And that is very unusual that you're on such a homogenous cruise in terms of so many people of the same nationality that isn't the Philippines or Indonesia or...
True, and I mean, you know, in Europe on the Danube, you've got a lot of crew that are still European, but they're from several different European countries, Hungary, Austria, Germany, things like that, so...
Yeah, that was kind of neat because the tour guides were also Portuguese on the ship. They were Portuguese, so they have a passion for this country. And when you had a question about something you saw along the river, they usually knew the answer, or they would, you know...
Or just, it was their hometown. Yeah.
Right, or they knew the little hot spots that no one else knew about because, you know, they lived here all their lives.
Although that was very disappointing to our guide today and to our bus driver that favorite pastry place had closed.
Yeah, they were under construction. She said the best pastry place in all... of
they'd spent in all of the
what town was that?
Let's go with Lamego. Sounds right.
We're working on our Portuguese, even the town names. It's been a struggle.
But yeah, they did spend a lot of time sort of hyping up this pastry shop to us, and we all bought into it, and so of course once you finally find it, you find out it's closed, and they were just as disappointed as we were. But I did the galley tour a few days ago, which I was like doing on ships just to see what the technical spaces are that they have to work with. Mm. The galley is about the size of this suite, I think, maybe a little bit bigger.
All right, but this suite is pretty big.
This suite's big, but I mean, you're talking about a galley that's maybe 600-700 square feet. It's not huge. It's tiny. For the amount of people, they have to feed 106 people plus the crew 3 times a day, every day, without fail. And one of the things they said that was fascinating was that all of the ingredients they use on board the ship for the food all come from Portugal, with the exception of the smoked salmon, which they have to import from Norway, because they told me their Portuguese smoked salmon is, you don't want it.
Cod also, they did mention that in Portugal they eat a lot of cod, but it is also Norwegian.
Right, okay.
And we did have a couple of cod dishes, so I think that's likely to come from Norway also.
Yeah.
But
yeah, the ingredients have been... I mean, the nice thing about river cruising is the ingredients do generally tend to be fresh, because you're loading on provisions in all sorts of ports. I mean, if you need something, the chef can go into the market and get it.
Well, in fact, today he did a market tour to take people into the market to kind of show them what he was buying.
That reminds me too, they've been very attentive to any kind of dietary needs. I know Aaron and Mary probably attest to that.
And not just on the ship, actually. Whenever we were on excursions having lunch or dinner somewhere else, we had this little piece of paper written on it that you were vegetarian or gluten free, or you were only eating fish or whatever, and you had to hold it and just put it in for the plate, and then the waiter would see that you can't eat whatever they serve you, and you wouldn't even have to ask or anything, it was just be served.
And that's a really good point, too, because, I mean, you know, you'd expect them to cater to allergies or dietary requirements on the ship, but to be able to do it ashore like that, that's really impressive.
Right. And we ate off-ship quite a bit.
Yeah, on this trip. It's interesting. Well, it makes sense, too, because you would often have driven, as we said, half hour away or something like that, where I'm... Like when I did the Rhine River cruise, we would get a 1 hour walking tour and then we would be on our own.
Sure.
This one is a little different because where the sites are that we'd be going to.
And in some ways, I think that's not bad because I think that sometimes when the ship is very close, say if you're docked in, you know, Bratislava or something like that, the ship's 4 minutes away. So I think people sometimes have a tendency to go back to the ship because they go, well, it's free, I paid for
exactly.
it.
Right,
and the food's good. But the problem is that comes at a cost because you're not actually eating the local food or experiencing the local beverages, food, wine, things like that. So here, by having these organized excursions where you are all doing this and going to some place, you do get some authentic food.
And not only did we get to enjoy authentic food in these places, but listen to some music.
Yeah,
the fado,
music, the fado
and flamenco we heard last night. So that was some entertainment while we were eating in these places. Was kind of
flamenco was in.
Flamenco was... Yes, that was in Spain, so we had some Spanish music on this trip as well as some Portuguese fado.
Yeah. Any other surprises?
Actually, people on board all get along, and that's something that, it's incredible. Like, there are Americans and British people and Australians, but they all get along, and they're having so much fun. I've never seen... So many people are having so much fun on sun deck like this afternoon. Like, we went all crazy. Like, it was just okay, well, this is the first afternoon we're spending on the boat. So, and it was the last day, or it is the last day today. And people were relaxed and they were like having fun drinking cocktails and on the top deck. And
they're nice too. I mean, they're really nice.
Adorable.
They're friendly to each other and even to us, you know, like we were mentioning earlier. I mean, our age range skews much younger than they are. And but they've been nothing but lovely, and it doesn't matter. I think, like, you know,
even
Mary was saying.
Yeah, even for I actually, I was the photographer on board. It was really hard for me to go to people and ask, like, could you pose, or could you be like this, or could you do that, or do you don't mind if I take pictures of you, or whatever. And the thing is that they were all so nice to me. They were like, there's no problem if you are.
That's one thing I find about cruising, too, is, I mean, a cruise ship's really different from a hotel. I mean, if you're in a hotel and you pass somebody in the hallway, you generally don't say hello or good morning. You kind of pass silently and you don't...
It depends on what country you're in and what part of the country you're in.
Take the steam out of my comment.
Well, you're from Canada where we know people
We're terrible. We're the worst. But it is interesting because generally... If you're in a hotel,
you're not there to interact with
people. Exactly. You're there to sleep and do whatever. And I think on a cruise ship of any size, you get people where it doesn't matter what country you're from or what age you are or anything like that. They say good morning and how are you?
Well, you're much more likely to get to know people on a smaller ship.
Yeah,
whether,
I was going to say.
Whether a cruise ship or expedition style ship.
It's been kind of a bonding experience, too, because we've been on this ship for all week now. And by the end of the week, we're kind of like opening up more. We feel like we know everybody. We're all family now, and a smaller ship kind of helps with
it. And I think a little less, actually, potentially for us who are here on a press trip, because we tended quite often to stick to ourselves than for the normal passenger.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think there was even more mixing and more of that.
I actually went to a lot of people.
And you're gonna get adopted by people.
You are.
That's an entirely different.
Well, they didn't mind I was French, so I can stay with you.
One warning you would give. One thing people should know before they book the Viking River cruise on the Douro.
I think the one thing that people should realize about the Douro and about river cruising on the Douro is that it is not going to be identical to the Danube.
Right.
In terms of the ship or in terms of the maybe the ease of access to some of these places. This really is a trip that you are taking as a cultural immersion experience. So you are in it for the wineries, you are in it to go to see the port wine production and things like that. The towns are nice, but the towns are not, they're not Budapest, they're not Vienna, and they're not meant to be. They're not supposed to be.
Right.
So I think the most important thing is going because you want that cultural experience and you like the idea of taking a slightly different river cruise.
And on the other hand, I think that this would be a difficult place to see on your own on a car tour. I think
absolutely.
It would be more challenging to try and replicate what we did, but not from the river.
This is a very convenient way to see Portugal and to see one of Portugal's most well-regarded areas, which is the Douro River Valley.
Right.
And I would say that, you know, along the same lines, if you don't like history, if you don't like immersing yourself into other cultures, then you're probably not going to enjoy.
If you don't like history and you don't like wine, this is not the trip for you.
Well, maybe there's even something there, too. I mean, if you are non-alcoholic, I mean, if you do not drink alcoholic beverages, either by choice or because you're allergic to it or whatever, this also may not be the trip for you, because
probably
a large component of this revolves around wine and wine
tastings.
And,
you know, I don't drink alcohol.
Sure.
But the wait staff has been... it's funny because they remember every time they come over and say, oh, ginger ale, Coca-Cola, they offer me something else.
Well, did you find as someone that limited your ability to, like when we visit a winery?
Right, there was a few wine tastings and things.
Sure.
I was going to go around and get pictures.
A few wine tastings.
There was many of
those.
There
were three yesterday morning.
Before breakfast.
Three different types of muscatel,
But there were so many other things and so many beautiful scenes to capture that it, you know, it was a blip on the radar for me as far as it being a...
That's good, though. I think that's awesome to hear.
Yeah. And if you don't, you know, if you're against being on a bus, these buses, though, weren't like public transportation buses.
No, no.
Point out that these were really
brand new
buses with plenty of legroom. But if you don't want to be in a bus for, you know, and they weren't long trips, but if an hour-long bus trip isn't for you, then, you know, you might want to.
Yeah, that's a good point. If you're totally against motor coach travel, period.
Different cruise.
Different itinerary
for you.
Sure.
Yeah.
From a point of view, it would be like, if you want to be on a diet, then don't come.
That's a great point.
Do not weigh yourself after this.
The pastiche de nata might be a problem.
You lead to depression, actually, if you weigh yourself after that.
We didn't talk about that, but that was a wonderful...
yes, there's a coffee station on board with cookies and pastries. And
The coffee, like for a coffee fan. That's something that...
That's added a few pounds, I think, to all of us.
Excellent. Why don't we go around and tell people who you are again and what your site is and where people can read more about your travels.
My name is Aaron Saunders, and I write for two websites. I write for FromTheDeckChair.com, which is all about cruises of all kinds, and I also write for River Cruise Advisor, which is at RiverCruiseAdvisor.com, and that just focuses strictly on river cruises.
And my name is Jonathan Souza, and I write for CruiseFever.net along with my brother Ben. And Cruise Fever is for people that just have a fever for cruising. You just can't wait to get out in the ocean. Maybe you haven't tried it yet, and you want to look into it, get some tips and advice.
Or a river.
Or a river cruise. cruises of all kinds. So, and you can find us on CruiseFever.net and you know, follow us on all the other Instagram, Facebook, Twitter.
And you've done fewer cruises than Aaron this year,
but
this is not your only cruise. This year. Actually, it's my third this year, so I guess I'm heading in your direction.
Not the last,
Mary?
For sure.
I am Mary Quincy, a photographer hired by Viking on this ship, and also an Instagram user, and my name is Mary_Quincy on Instagram, and my website is maryquincy.com.
And she has incredible pictures.
Yeah, she does.
Yes, check out her pictures on Instagram. And if you liked this live version of The Amateur Traveler, then you might want to check out This Week in Travel, which is a different show. We talk a little more about travel writing and travel blogging on that show, but it is done in this format. And if you don't like this version of Amateur Traveler, if you don't like this live format, then be aware that next week's show won't be like this. Thanks very much, and...
Have a good...
I'm trying to think how to say it in Portuguese.
I don't usually sign off for this one.
Ciao.
Thank you all for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love, either newfound or long established, for river cruises and for Portugal.
Obrigado.
Obrigado.
Obrigada.
With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. I recommend you go over to the show notes. You'll see links to how you can do this cruise. You'll also see links to the websites for John and Aaron and Mary, as well as my pictures from this particular trip. And you'll also see the correction that phylloxera is an insect, even though I accidentally called it a disease in this particular episode. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. You can follow me on Twitter, Pinterest, or Instagram as Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening.